At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It's just coming up to 10 past five. You are listening to Women Talk. With me in the studio today, Debbie Bennett, Sheila Mellor and Mary Carmen. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you all for coming in today. If you're listening at home and you'd like to get involved, you are more than welcome. Here's how.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on plus 34 645 99 67 95.
Okay, let's crack on. There's an article here with a headline talking about a new book. It says, a new book on boosting your spiritual intelligence has some surprising suggestions. Want more money and success? Talk to fairies, gaze at the sky for 60 seconds and open all your windows once a day. So we're going to talk about some of these, if they're things that you've done before or might consider doing in the future, or if you have other things that you might do to bring yourself some luck. One of them talking about spiritually cleansing your home. Practice Stoßlüften. That's a German word, which means shock ventilation. It's a ritual in many northern European homes. Once or twice a day, all the windows and the doors in the house are opened to allow stale air out and fresh air in. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I like the idea of that.
That's
yeah.
Something I would do. I would open the windows.
Every day?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I do in the summer.
Yeah.
I love it.
When I'm in Spain.
Yeah, I don't know if we do every single one, but we certainly do a lot of it.
Not all the windows, but, you know, I open the doors and stuff and get the air in. I like the fresh air. Yeah.
It's a bit like that sage cleansing. You know,
that's point number two.
Oh, sorry.
Yes,
you jumped.
No, after you've got the air and then you're supposed to light a sage stick. I've never done that. Have you then?
Yeah.
Oh, is it
cleanse my corners? Oh, yes. Very important.
Cleansed corners.
Yes. Okay. I always wanted to live in a round house that never had, that didn't have corners.
Oh,
but,
nice.
Because things lurk in corners.
Okay. Mm. So with this sage, so it smells nice and it's supposed to be a water.
It just gets rid of any evil spirits that might be lurking.
Oh, good.
And okay. Then if your windows are open, they can escape.
They can escape. That makes sense, that. There we go. You haven't done this, Debbie?
No.
I
might try it later.
Try it?
Yeah. No, never try that. That just seems one step too far for me.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. I'm very
incense?
Focused.
Incense? What about incense? You like a bit of incense?
I love it.
Yeah. Debbie, no?
No, not
You're
really
more of a candle person?
I love a candle. I love a candle. I think a lot of those things, I'm not into crystals per se.
Yeah.
You know, I just think it's all about positivity, you know, about positive thoughts. So a lot of the things they were saying is to how it helps you to be positive. And I think if you have a positive mindset, you tend to produce more, be more productive anyway. Mm. We were saying beforehand that, like, for instance, tonight when we'd come along to the quiz, we can never get anywhere to park. So we have a chat with the parking fairy.
Uh-huh.
And the parking fairy normally delivers.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you do talk to fairies?
Oh, I certainly do.
Yes. You wouldn't like some sage, but talking to fairies,
no, absolutely. That's fine. That's what, of course. That's normal.
Well, I have a parking angel.
Parking angel, yeah.
That's my mum up in heaven who never, ever lets me down.
That's
she
amazing.
always finds me a parking spot. I can't think of one time when she hasn't found me
really?
One.
Really?
Wow. I just call on her and say, Gladys, I need a parking spot really badly, darling. Can you help me out? Every time.
That's brilliant. No. We all need a parking angel then. Yeah. We should all start speaking to parking angels because we all need a place to park.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we need to call on our parking angels. Another thing the article says is embrace superstition. Do you understand superstition, Mary?
I have heard in Andalusia mm-hmm. that when a house has bad energies, you burn rosemary. Take the rosemary, and actually it's good to have a rosemary plant in every house because it's like you're blessing the house. So the rosemary protects you from having bad energy. So if you are not selling a house or you have having problems to sell a house, what I say is just take all the
needles.
Hair of the rosemary and put in a bowl and put some alcohol and then burn it along the house. And that takes out all the bad energy.
I thought she was going to say drink it, didn't you?
What a waste of alcohol,
Make some rosemary gin. Exactly.
And if you can't get rid of the bad energy, you don't care.
I remember, like, when I was growing up, people used to talk about superstition a lot and the whole, you know, you mustn't walk under ladders and, you know, you mustn't walk on cracks and all that kind of thing. And I used to think about it a lot. I don't so much now. In fact, sometimes I see a ladder and I think, I'm just going to walk under that.
Me too. On a ladder.
Really,
I feel the ladder is a challenge. And there are certain things which I consider the 13th my lucky number. I was born on the 13th, so the 13th for me, the number 13 is a lucky number for me. But there are certain things that I won't do, and it's just a little few quirks, really. If I drop a knife, I can't pick it up. And I can't say, I've dropped a knife, can you come and pick it up? I just go, I need help, please. And then Peter will appear, as if by magic. He'll see the knife and just pick it up. I have no idea where that comes from, but it just feels weird to me to pick up a knife.
And unless somebody else...
Yeah, I can't pick it up. But I can't say.
Ask him either.
Because if you drop a knife and somebody else picks it up, especially if it's a woman, they say, knife to the floor, man to the door. It's a way of attracting a male to you. That's a superstition.
Really?
Knife to the floor, man to the door. If anybody drops a knife, I'm the first there, I can believe me.
How does that work? Debbie drops a knife and
there we go, it works then. Might have to rent you out, Peter.
Yeah, there he is.
I'm really superstitious.
Are you?
I wouldn't stir with a knife, or I wouldn't put shoes on a table. I would never walk under a ladder.
Okay.
I'm really, and I think because my mum was, and it was just like, you know, she'd just...
There's different things to do with, like handbags as well, and you're not supposed to put handbags on the floor, are you?
No, because all your wealth
disappears. Everyone's picking up their handbags.
And you should never buy a purse for somebody, but if you do, the only way to break the spell is to put some silver inside it.
Or put some money in. We always said if you buy someone a wallet or a purse that you should put money in. I'm not saying loads of money, just a coin,
just a
couple of euros, 5 euros, whatever. So it's never empty.
Okay. And never buy gloves.
Empty.
Who bought it? and never buy gloves. Now I don't know where that comes from.
Gloves.
Never buy gloves for somebody. No.
Oh, for somebody else.
No, never.
Oh.
And I don't know where that comes. I have to look that up.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's funny, isn't it? Where these things come from?
Hmm. They've usually got some source when you do look them up.
And I always get confused about black cats because some people say black. Oh, sorry, cats. We love cats. Some people say black cats are lucky, and then other people say black cats are unlucky. I never know what.
If it crosses your path, it's lucky.
Oh, is it? I thought it was unlucky.
Yes, exactly.
I thought if a black cat
walks in front of you.
Yeah, I have heard that before. That is unlucky.
I heard that before. Let's make it lucky.
Lucky,
yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's not true.
I was still blessed.
Ladder's lucky.
From now on, it's lucky.
Yeah.
But it's funny, isn't it? These things that you, if you just decide that it's you're not going to go there, you can just keep that up forever.
Do you remember as kids we used to do this thing that if you saw a magpie?
One for sorrow, two for joy.
We used to say you had to hold your collar.
We'd
say
an ambulance.
And you had to say, hello, Mr. Magpie, where's Mrs. Magpie? Has she gone shopping? You had to say that.
To break the spell.
And then hold your collar until you saw something like three taxis or 25 something else.
Wow.
It was ridiculous. You'd be hanging on and praying that there were another taxi. It wasn't a taxi, it was an ambulance or something.
Or a funeral thing. Hold your collar if you saw a funeral procession.
God. Really?
And touch your fingers, touch your toes, never go in one of those. And then you had to hold your collar till you saw something. I can't remember what.
Wow. Yeah. I used to have a thing with drains when I was at school. If you shouldn't tread on an odd number of drains because it's bad luck, but an even number is okay. And I think about it every time I walk across drains. And sometimes I do it, and sometimes I go, "Oh, odd drains, never mind." You know, it's not clearly not true. But sometimes I'm like, "Oh, there's two drains together. I'll walk across them." So sometimes I boycott it because I think it's funny, and then other times I'm like, "Oh no, odd drains, must avoid that."
Yeah, today's a drain day.
Yeah,
Tread on a crack, you know, on a pavement crack.
I'm over that now.
Too many cracks.
Certainly potholes, you'll go missing, won't you?
Yeah. There's another one here. We're just talking about looking at the stars. Do you look up at the stars?
Yeah.
I don't know whether it brings me luck or anything. It's just something to do.
Just something.
I have asked the universe for things before. I've just been in that situation and thought, and I actually normally on the morning if I was walking and stick my arms in the air and ask the universe for something
did
it deliver? I'm not sure that it did, but you know, it feels good
eventually. It takes a long time.
Exactly.
We've had a message from Margaret who says black cats, if they walk left to right, it's lucky. Right to left is unlucky.
Oh, wow.
Really?
We're going to have to write that one down and carry it with us, aren't we?
That's a bit OCD, isn't it?
Yes.
I think all the superstitions has a bit of OCD, isn't it? It's like, I have to touch this, I have to count 14 times, I have to see this way and left to right, right to left.
They've been created by people with OCD.
Maybe.
There's a piece on quitting work. It says, last year, record numbers of women in their 50s retired early. Now, many of them are desperate to return. What happened when the quitterati woke up to the reality of life after work? I was talking about this subject with a friend the other day, actually, the whole idea of retiring and retirement age and just the kind of assumption when you're younger that you retire when you're older and you automatically have money to travel the world and have a nice life. And obviously it's not always like that. So it's a really interesting kind of idea that, you know, what if you do get to retirement age and you haven't got a pot of money and you want to keep working because you want the money and also something to do. The idea of when you stop working, some people feel lost with it because if their job has been their life, it's something they really enjoy. Some people are desperate to kind of have that back.
I was just having a look at that article and some of the things it was saying, that these individuals who couldn't wait to retire and, you know, walking out and stuff, what's happened is the cost of living crisis has really impacted on how much money is in their pot. Mm-hmm. So therefore things are, their money is disappearing quicker and quicker, and I think that's a bit of a panic saying, you know, they need to, it's not going to be enough to retire on. The figures they quote for retirement are absolutely ludicrous now. I think, does it say
30,000, I think you said.
Yeah, it's about, I thought it was about 30 grand. It used to be about 30 grand a couple, and now it's 50, I think.
I still don't think you could live on that.
I can't see any numbers.
There's some numbers there. I think it said to retire for a single person, 38, and this is pounds, £38,000 for a single person, and something like £54,000 a year for a married couple. And going back, that used to be about 30 for a married couple. Mm. So that's one hell of a lot of money that you need to be able to have an okay lifestyle. Not extravagant, an okay lifestyle. And I think that's really impacted, and the boredom factor, of course.
Mm. Yeah. But I couldn't have even dreamt about retiring mid-50s. No. I wouldn't have had anything like enough money to have been able to, you know, my pension didn't mature until I was 65, and, you know, I love my job too much as well, but I think retiring in your 50s is...
Finish that sentence.
It's very idealistic.
I guess it depends what profession, because, for instance, you get people working for the police, and having done a certain number of years, they do get...
It used to be like that in education, but of course that stopped.
Sure.
Because you used to be able to retire at 50 when you were a teacher.
Really?
Yeah, and they'd pay your pension up until you were 60.
Wow.
In the days when women retired at 60. Mm. That went out just before I got to 50.
Oh, how annoying.
No, it wouldn't have been annoying, because I would have stayed. I wouldn't have left, because I love my job too much.
Yeah.
Mm.
And do you think, are you happy now not working?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And nobody would believe that. Everybody that knows me would say, you'll never stop working, Sheila, you just will, because I was a total workaholic, but I have never looked back. And I don't know how I found time to work.
They all say that when they retire, that you know, they wonder how they managed to fit it in.
That's lovely, isn't it? How do you feel about it?
Well, I always thought I'd want to be working forever, because I love to work. I like to keep busy. But I'm getting tired now. I start getting tired, and I actually think I'd like the choice. I don't think I'll ever stop doing work, because I think it's important to keep your brain active, and I think it keeps you younger anyway. But I think it's just about having the choice. I want to decide to... I'd like to be able to say I could retire tomorrow if I wanted to, but I choose not to. The reality is I can't retire tomorrow.
I got to a point, I suppose, where I could afford to retire, and I was getting tired. And I went down to 3 days a week, and you can't keep at the cutting edge of education on 3 days a week. You can't do it. I was educating heads, and you can't keep at that cutting edge. So
but you're still trying to do 5 days work in
I did five in three because I used to do seven in five.
Is it something you think about, Mary?
I was thinking that maybe not retiring at 50, but I know many women that in their 50s they start again their career, or they do what they wanted to do during the youth. You have your children now, your children are grown, and now you have time to go to the university and study history or study chemist or anything that they don't. It's like the second chance of the life to maybe leaving your job step by step and starting to do what you really wanted to do when you were young. So I think the 50s is not, I don't see like the ideal of retiring. I see like the second chance of starting what you wanted to do.
So it's not the end, it's the beginning.
With experience, with your wisdom of being a 50s woman.
Like that. We better take a break.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk. With me in the studio today, Debbie Bennett, Sheila Mellor and Mary Carmen.
There's an article talking about hen do's. The person writing the article said, I've spent £4,500 on hen do's and I didn't even enjoy all of them. She talks about how the traditional evening with a few friends has turned into a costly 3-day extravaganza. I was just thinking, if you've got a group of friends who are all the same age, then then you're much more likely to kind of have the experience where everyone's getting married within a few years, and then it's one hen do and engagement party and wedding after another, and it'll all become really, really expensive. But living here as an expat, it's more normal to have friends of various different ages, and therefore that doesn't tend to happen so much. But Mary, living in Spain and being from Spain, are you seeing this happening with you?
Not long time ago, last week we had a wedding of our friends, and I didn't do a hen night, mm-hmm. because I'm not a friend of the bride.
Okay.
I'm a friend of the
groom.
Yeah. But my partner is the best friend of the groom, so they went to Granada for a weekend, and they didn't spend that much. Like, they spent...
That's what he told you.
Yeah. No, I believe him. He spent about 150 per person, because they rented a house with a swimming pool, and they went to Granada going out, and then they went a paintball and all this. So I don't know. I think if you have more money, you spend more money. So don't have that much money, and you want to spend.
Yeah, it's true.
But it's very, very expensive, because you have the hen night, and then the dress, the present, because you give money for the present. Mm-hmm. My partner didn't go to hairdresser or anything. He just bought a suit, but I bought my dress. I put my nails. I did my makeup. I did my hair. I was like... I hope nobody gets married until next year, please.
Yes,
a lot of money.
And the thing is, what you say about not having money, a lot of the time you have friends and everybody's in a different financial situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So if the bride or the person throwing the party has got money and wants to go to a really expensive restaurant and a really expensive beach club, and then and has got all these things lined up, they're going to cost lots of money. Yeah. It might be fine for her, but there might be other people in the group that are like, oh, I really
please,
can't.
I cannot do
this.
Yeah.
It can be tricky.
Yeah, and
it's
difficult.
I think it just becomes a bit of a cliche now. I think a lot of people are doing it. When we were coming, we went to, I don't know where we went, Barcelona recently. When we arrived, there were other people there on hen do's, stag do's and everything. It just seems to be the thing that they're doing, you know, with... And it gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's almost, it used to be just the wedding, have fun before the wedding, but a low-key affair. My hen party was in a restaurant, you know, and we had great fun, lots of drink, lots of food, but it was all pretty civilised, bit of dancing, whatever, go home, and it was all a reasonable cost. Mm. If somebody had said that we're going to, you know, a weekend in Budapest, well, that would be nice, but I'd rather go with Peter... and spending a grand or whatever. No, count me out.
Mm. No.
And I've never been to a hen party.
No. Shall we have one?
Let's do one.
And I've been married 3 times. I've never had a hen party.
And you haven't had one either? No.
Wow.
I think it's become, as Debbie said, much more of a bigger thing. And the fact that people talk about it, and we see, you know, following people on social media or on television or whatever, everyone goes to Marbella for the weekend or goes to Las Vegas you know, goes somewhere.
They're trying to outdo each other, aren't they?
Yeah, I think people would think if they were getting married now that... I think people, not everybody, because some people wouldn't really care, but other people might think it feels a bit
lame
or whatever just to go out on one evening, because people tend to make it last for a weekend or even a week. So I think people feel that that's what is expected of them now, which is a shame.
I get if you have different friendship groups that maybe you might want to, I'll do a little meal here with this group and I'll do that and whatever, that makes perfect sense. But to do this whole, you know, time away and then go to restaurants, do this, do that, and spend so much, just a bit ridiculous.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I think just an evening, I see like a little, I see very short, but maybe a weekend with your friends on a reasonable way of, you go out and you go for dinner maybe, and maybe you do some activities, but nothing over the top. You just go like to Granada, or you go to Cádiz one weekend. That's nice. Yeah. Maybe when evening is a little bit short to do a hen night, maybe. I don't know.
It's strange because it traditionally was called a hen night. Nice. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Now it's become a hen week. Or a hen week. Yeah. But the other thing that struck me with this is, I read a book recently which was all about this subject, the idea, the art of basically saying no, and how difficult we sometimes find it to say no when you're invited to something, whether it's a dinner party or whether it's a birthday celebration or whatever it might be. If you don't want to go, or maybe you can't afford to go, or all a multitude of reasons, how uncomfortable we generally feel saying, thank you, but I won't go. You feel like you need to have an extravagant excuse. Yeah, you can't just kind of say, oh, thanks so much for the invite, but no. Because that would come across as rude. People would say, oh, how come? Yeah. You know, you feel like you've got a...
It's funny. Yeah. You're my matron of honour.
Exactly. You have to be there.
I'm marrying you.
Well, then you definitely can't go.
But no, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah. How uncomfortable we generally feel as adults saying no.
And I can remember reading a book about 20 years ago. I wish I could remember the title. I've just been trying to think of it. Where it said, when you actually do say no, stop giving an excuse. That's kind of the first.
Keep playing. And I can't do it. Yeah.
Just say, I'm really sorry. I can't make that. And that, don't say because. Yeah. Even when you have got a genuine reason, I'm going to the dentist, I've got my hair done, don't. Just say, oh no, I'm really sorry, I can't make it. Because then when you get into those situations where you just want to say no because you don't really want to do it,
it's not such a big deal.
It's not a big deal because you've got used to not justifying your reason for saying
that's
no.
That's a good idea. Mm.
So you grow into it.
Yeah, don't tell anyone. It's no one's business. Thank you for the invite, but I can't make it.
Not coming. Get over yourself.
We better take another break.
Hannah Murray, TRE, in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk with me in the studio today, Debbie Bennett, Sheila Meller and Mary Carmen.
So this is the headline. Meet the 50-something pension hunters. Forget tall, dark and handsome. These middle-aged women are only after one thing from a chap, his super-sized retirement fund. There's various women in the article who are basically talking about the fact that they want to have a nice life, they want to travel, they want nice things, and they don't have enough money to do that themselves. So they are actively looking for an older man with lots of money. Do we think this is perfectly acceptable or extremely shallow or what? Mary, you seem shocked at this.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I'm shocked because of the sincerity of the people.
Yeah, the honesty.
The honesty, I think, actually, I think if all the people were so honest, the world would be easier for everybody.
It's true.
Yeah. I wonder if they're honest to the people that they're dating them.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah,
although
I wonder.
Saying that, here we are in Marbella, it's not like it's a bit of a shock. I mean, you only have to look out there and see the man with his daughter, taking her for dinner. Is it his daughter? No, it's his girlfriend. You know, so we're sort of quite used to seeing the difference in age here, aren't we?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
But to actually clearly say that they're looking for someone, good on them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can find her. Really, it's hard enough finding a nice guy that hasn't got any money, never mind a nice guy that's got some.
They never said they were nice, did they?
Yeah. They said they weren't bothered about that.
Didn't mention that. No, it's... I think it's nice that people can be honest about it, because it comes across as very kind of shallow, because surely it's more important that they're a nice guy, as you say. I've sort of met people in my life who have been quite open about this, about wanting to be with a man with lots of money, and sometimes the man with lots of money is quite happy to be with someone who, I mean, it needs to be a kind of mutually beneficial arrangement, doesn't it? As long as the man is getting whatever he wants from the woman.
Moving on.
Whether it's the fact that she's young and attractive and a nice piece of eye candy on his arm, whether it's the fact that she's, I don't know, a good mother and a good stepmother to his children, grandchildren, whatever. You know, there's so many things. Whether she's, a good cook, if she's funny, she's a good person.
Well, maybe they're just nice people.
Exactly.
And, but it's almost like having a checklist, isn't it? You know, must be tall, blonde hair, blue eyes. Big bank balance, you know. You thought I was going to say something else, but it was the bank balance I was alluding to. So obviously, I think it's just to get into an age when they're thinking about the latter stage of their life, and they need money to enjoy it. We were talking about, you know, cost of living beforehand. They're now focusing on retirement. They can't afford to retire perhaps on their own. They want a good life. They need someone to be able to fund it. Is that a bad thing? Not if they're being honest.
It's true, isn't it? I mean, there's the age thing, I guess, does make a difference. You know, when you're younger and there's the view of, you know, getting jobs and doing certain things. But if you're of a certain age where you are wanting to retire or have already retired and you do want to see the world or do certain things, I guess it could make a difference to some people as to how much money they have to do that. It's a weird thing, because I do find it slightly uncomfortable. I find it a bit sort of sad in a way that it should make a difference. But I guess when we are looking at the later years of life, not that someone in their 50s is the later years of life at all, but you know, kind of settling down and spending time not working and doing stuff, you don't want to have to worry about money, do you?
Of course, when you think if you're going to, you know, you're getting in your 50s, whatever, there's going to come a time when you're going to stop working and you're used to earning, I don't know, whatever, let's say that are used to earning
50 grand.
Yeah, 50 grand, yeah, a nice figure. So let's say they're used to getting 5 grand a month, and then suddenly they're not getting it, and yet they still want the same lifestyle. How are they going to pay for it? And obviously they've done the maths and they've worked out they can't, but so they need someone else who can.
Yeah.
I mean, I never thought in my life ever that I would take economics into account when it came to romance. But I have to say, I wouldn't want to meet anybody now that didn't have the same amount of money as I had. I wouldn't like to, you know, to be in a situation. I hate to think that, but it's true.
You wouldn't want to feel like you needed to pay for them
all the time,
in order to and this came up, this was an article recently, and that it had a real shocking headline, but the woman had said that she wasn't interested in dating men who had didn't have as much money as she did, and it came across a bit kind of shocking and a bit kind of shallow. But when she explained it, she was explaining it exactly like that she wanted to go to nice restaurants and wanted to go on nice holidays, and he didn't because he wasn't used to, because he didn't have as much money as she did. And some people on the panel were kind of saying, well, why doesn't she just pay for him? And it wasn't that simple. It's not, is it?
It's not. What? I think I've worked hard all my life to get, you know, what I've got now, and I don't want to squander it on somebody that hasn't been able to do that by whatever means.
I think having the same values as you, I think that's, for me, would be important, is that if you like to do it, we don't mind compromising, do we? We don't mind compromising and not saying going to fine restaurants all the time. But, you know, if you want to be able to do it, you want to know that they can afford it, not that you're having to pay for it all the time.
I think it's, thinking about the money is maybe, well, in my opinion, I think is losing a bit the north, because you can find a guy with big, lots of money, but the main thing is that the money has his life like in order, like in a stable thing, because there are a lot of people that has money and they are not stable at all.
No. So, or nice people. Or
So I wouldn't mind, I think, to meet a man with money or not money, but if I see that the money is not stable, I don't care. how much money you have in your bank, because yeah, I know that I'm not going to be happy next to you.
Exactly.
I think
it shouldn't be the be all and end all.
No. Yeah, and I think these ladies with maybe 50 in the 50s, they have the experience and the wisdom, as we say before, with to be honest and say, okay, I want this, and if you like this and you're happy with this, let's do it together. Why not? So I think the main thing is to have the experience to put in the table your cards and see how you can play, you know?
Yeah.
So, but the main thing for me wouldn't be the money. It would be that the money is good in here, in the in the head.
Yeah.
Let's say, yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Same, yeah, same.
I think she's asking too much. I'll just stick with the money, shall we?
Same.
Yeah.
Same. Imagine meeting somebody sane.
Sane and with money. Oh, and with
both. Wow. Well, that's going to be a difficult one, isn't
we've
it?
We've got one more break to take.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to the last part of today's Women Talk. With me in the studio, we have Debbie Bennett, Sheila Mellor and Mary Carmen. So this is a really interesting one. The headline reads, "Why You Should Beware a Man Who Showers You with Gifts and Affection," by a woman who says they can be the first sign he's a scary control freak. And she goes into quite a lot of detail. They haven't been together that long, and she goes around to his apartment. There's candles everywhere. He gives her expensive jewellery. It all seems perfect, and all her friends are saying, oh, he's a keeper, he's a great one here. And then things go horribly wrong. I thankfully don't have experience of this, but you have something to say.
I mean,
anyone
speak.
I think well, it's very unfair on nice boys, because nice boys do these things and they are nice.
Yes, yes.
So it's a bit,
it can be okay.
It's a bit unfair for them, but sadly, not only men. I'm going to take advantage to say that also women who are very detailed, be careful with them, because I think from my personal experience, when someone is giving you all the details and is not forgetting anything or just giving you the best things, is because they have some dependence, emotional stuff there, not sorted.
Yeah.
So they don't want you to let you go.
Yeah.
And that's the...
It's all about control.
The nice way of not letting you go, but when all gets in time later, then you see the monster after that.
Mm.
So, but not only men. I have seen also women doing this, and really I think it's mistreat.
Yeah,
really,
yeah,
at the end of the day.
It's interesting actually to think about not just in a boyfriend-girlfriend, but actually your own girlfriend network or something. I've never really thought of it that way. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. You said you knew someone, didn't you?
Yeah, I know a few people, but and have had personal experience of it, because it can be very flattering, and
you think, feel lucky, I guess,
swept off your feet. It is kind of, and it plays to the ego, and of course we've all, well, speak for yourself, Sheila. We I have problems, you know, over the course of my life, trying to keep the ego in check, and it can be, you just feel swept off your feet. And it's almost like when it happened to me, everything I saw, everything I wanted was just bought for me. And little did I know, we got married very quickly. It was all happened very, very quickly. And he actually had a serious mental illness when it came down to it all. But he bought me everything without me realising. We put all our affairs into joint names, and he was just running up masses and masses and masses of debt, because he was buying me gold rings, gold necklaces. I was mad about unicorns. I had every unicorn on the planet. I only had to say I liked something, and it was there. And then the day came when the bank statement.
Oh my gosh. Dear. Did you actually find out that you're actually funding the thing?
Stupid things that, you like, but you didn't necessarily want to have.
So how do you think we know, the fact that you said, Mary, that, you know, there can be obviously nice men, nice people that do want to buy lots of gifts and do romantic gestures all the time. How do we know whether someone is just being nice and generous and affectionate, or they're a crazy person?
I think if somebody finds you emerald earrings after 2 weeks, it's probably not the normal thing. Yeah.
Too much too soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Okay. If you had an Easter egg or something, fine.
Well.
Yeah. But if someone suddenly, hi, come on, let's go for a date, and by the way, here's a diamond ring, that's got to be a bit wacky.
Yeah. Or sending you roses to work, which happened to me, not just a dozen roses, you know, dozen roses.
Oh, goodness.
To your workplace. And again, why send roses to a workplace? It's kind of...
Yeah.
To show to other people, otherwise to send them to your home.
I think you have to give time to see how the thing goes.
And be wise.
Yeah. And with the time, you will see tricky things and dark things. And then you say, But it's not advertising. There are very, very nice boys and girls out there.
Yeah. Of course.
Absolutely.
And we don't want to deter them from doing that.
Diamonds would be nice. Roses.
I don't mind emeralds on the second date. So.
Just feel free to do it.
Dear. I'm just older and wiser now, so...
Yeah, exactly. We've got under 4 minutes left to talk about this last one. How partners snoring could save the marriage. When your partner's snoring gets so bad that you have to sleep in separate beds, it may feel like conceding that your marriage's best days are behind you. But a professor has suggested that couples should see the move into different rooms as the exciting beginnings of a new relationship.
I thought, what a lovely positive way to look upon the problem of snoring, especially as you get older. I thought that was really nice. And make it like a date night.
Snoring date night?
No, like, no, you won't come into my room tonight, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Make it more special.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you have an opinion on
this? Yeah, because all the partners I had before, or at the time when I was living with someone, I always slept on my own. I like sleeping on my own. I hate sleeping with someone.
Okay.
I don't like sleep because it's very uncomfortable. Or I snore, or he snore. So I prefer to sleep on my own, and I think it's very good for the relationship that you don't sleep together all the time. Well, so you don't have to wait for your partner to snore, or you to snore. You can just say we have just our own bed, and then that's it.
Yeah,
that's my opinion, but
absolutely
great. But I can't imagine not sharing my bed without Peter there.
Yeah,
I mean, I snore and he snores, and if he said if we were out and he was saying he's having a few drinks and reaches for the red wine, I would throw him the eyes, meaning I know what noise that's going to make. So you will not be sleeping in my bed. But no, I think
with the dog.
I like to hug him, and I like to know he's there. In fact, the other night I had lots in my mind and I wasn't sleeping. He was fast asleep, not snoring, and I could just see his outline, and it made my heart melt.
Aww.
Just knowing he was there, and just to feel him, and you know, and just know he's there. It's lovely. I couldn't imagine. I would hate for him to be in another room. I think perhaps, you know, in time, if there was a, you know, I couldn't sleep and he was really snoring, I would get up and go to another room for a couple of hours or something. But I want to share my bed with him.
Yeah.
And you? It's not with Peter.
Yeah. No, that would be weird.
Thank goodness for that. Not that much.
No, it's a funny one. I mean, I wear earplugs every night to go to sleep, so I don't have to hear it snoring. I couldn't sleep without them. Sometimes if we go on holiday, even if it's for one night and I've forgotten my earplugs, we have to go to a pharmacy so I can buy some earplugs. Otherwise, the evening will be a nightmare. And sometimes I've had to like make them out of tissue if I haven't been able to get some, and they don't work as well, and I don't have as good a night's sleep, and I'm not so bright sprightly in the morning. So I agree the importance of a good sleep, but if you've got good earplugs, I sleep perfectly well with earplugs. But sometimes if one of us isn't well, not wanting to pass a cold onto the other person or whatever, then normally him, bless him, will go and sleep in the spare room. And initially when he's going into the spare room, it's like, it's sad, but then I do sleep perfectly.
Oh, no,
it's
then
not like I'm pining, thinking, I can't sleep without him.
I'm
actually okay.
Yeah. No, me too. It would happen with me and Peter, and you stretch out and everything.
Yeah, but, and it's quite nice.
Exactly. Not only for a short period of time. Yeah.
I love the distance of sleeping on my own, and you can just move to the bed.
I have a super king bed, and I sleep in one tiny bed. You can see. I don't even have to change the whole sheet because I just have to move it across.
So funny.
Yeah.
Well, we're at the end of the show, ladies. Thank you all
thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you to Debbie Bennett, Sheila Mellor and Mary Carmen. And thank you to you at home listening. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. I know it's only Thursday, but I'm not here tomorrow. Howard Brereton is coming up after the news with Spain Today. I will be back on Monday at 4 o'clock.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.